I'm Virginia Schutte.
And I'm Beth-Ann Garaman-Merkel, and this is Meteor, the honest podcast about SciComm with impact.
Listeners, we invite you to think of this episode as a conversation between mid-career professionals during a break at a conference. Please come join us at that giant round table. We have a good vent blowing warm air on us in the corner. You're welcome.
And we're in that corner because we feel like there are lots of great SciComm spaces already devoted to entry-level skill building. So we're over here having an advanced user conversation, and we want you to join us.
We want to open up these conversations beyond just us, and we say it every week because we mean it. We want to connect with you. You can do that through Twitter or through our website, both of which are linked in the show notes. Today, we are talking about work-life harmony. I just want to start us off by saying that we actively resist the term work-life balance because all those images of a scale, like the golden hanging kind of basket kind of scale, it makes it feel like work and life then are mutually exclusive, and prioritizing one deprioritizes the other if it's work-life balance. Some people use work-life integration, but for me, I don't need to work on work-life integration because they're already so stinking integrated. So I feel like then if they're already integrated, if they're already like not mutually exclusive, what I need then is a harmony where I'm able to get work done. I'm able to fulfill myself along the way.
Yeah, this lands squarely where we have a lot of conversations, which is about jargon and word choice. And my angle on this is that I've been developing some trainings and a manuscript that relate to work-life harmony in SciComm. And because of our conversations, I've also leaned away from the implied trade-offs and tension of balance. So, for example, in the big picture goals workshop that I'm running in January, we'll be looking at trying to align our vision for our lives rather than pitting those various priorities against each other. Quick plug, if you want to join that convo, you can sign up at meteorsciComm.org/courses.
So I feel like a lot of the help articles that I read about work-life balance focus on how to spend less time on work. It's a lot about an accounting of time spent and how to draw lines. And they kind of assume that you want to reduce the amount of work time you spend. I think when we start considering it as harmony and how to achieve that harmony, for me, then it becomes less about the absolute number of hours and drawing hard lines and saying, get out of my personal life and stay in my work life, and more about how you achieve a blend of yourself and your work that works sustainably. So for the long term. Both you and I, Beth-Ann, have made a lot of stuff for groups or organizations or brands of some sort, like departments at a university. And I think making something as a brand requires that you kind of adopt the identity of the brand during the process. You have to kind of think like the brand, or you publish as if you are the brand. Like when I say something on Twitter, it's still words coming out of a person's mouth, but it's the brand's account. Yep. And I think that it's very not hypothetical to think about how much you assume brand identity and let go of your own.
Yeah, I think that's very real. And I know that you had personal experience with trying to navigate that line.
Yeah, I spent a couple years doing all the social media for Marine Lab, and there were so many things. I feel like at least once a week from the beginning to the end of that job, something would come up and I'd say, well, do I post about this from the brand account, or is this a Virginia thing from my personal social media account? Is this something that the Marine Lab wants to say on Twitter, or is this something I want to say on Twitter? And understanding the line is often just what kind of a mood you are in and what kind of a mood are your supervisors in. Totally. And then there's also this kind of risk factor where, you know, if your job was like mine was at that time, you're supposed to be experimenting with social media. And so there were some things that I thought, well, I could post about this as myself, but I think it'll be really neat and cool and cross some boundaries if the brand posted about it instead, because brands are usually kind of, you know, stuffy and sterile is the stereotype. And so if I could make it be a real person thing, but from the brand account, I think it would break down some barriers. But then mm-hmm. if it goes wrong, then I've done something wrong for my job where I'm supposed to experiment. So there's just all this risk involved with like personal versus professional. It's a very not philosophical discussion.
Yeah, I agree. And I've seen this struggle play out unavoidably and I think predictably in places where the groundwork isn't done. And by that, I mean establishing a plan that articulates the brand, the tone, the topics, no-goes, basically the persona of the entity and its account. And I think this is relevant to where we are in our careers right now because we are no longer the people trying to navigate that. We're more the people trying to help people understand how important this groundwork and planning even is so that they can have an effective process and a coherent voice. And I think this is also where a lot of the bottleneck happens. I work with folks who don't trust each other or their employees, delegates, whatever it might be, to adhere to guidelines, or they just don't even have them, or they don't have a process for someone to say, hey, I want to go a little bit outside the line. And if you don't dial that stuff in first and onboard people to it, then you get to do that work with every stinking post.
I think you're right about how these things play out predictably as well. And I think this is much broader than just the people who are producing social media content as science communicators. So I'm thinking about, I went to a conference last year and I'm still waiting for this paper to come out. So I don't have actual numbers to cite, but there were some folks who did a study and more than half of the university departments they surveyed had no social media policy for the faculty and staff within their department. And the departments that did have social media policies, they were all about protecting the university if something went wrong. And what this means then is that if you're a faculty in, let's say, a biology department somewhere, and you're just going about your day posting as yourself on your personal social media account, but you say something like, I didn't like this part of our faculty meeting, or I don't like this part of our university. Can you get in trouble for that? Do you know? Does your department have a policy? Does it protect you? Or does it protect your employer? And so I think way beyond just the people who are tasked with regularly, you know, doing the job of creating posts, I think, gosh, this line is so, I just keep coming back to the risk involved. It really matters.
Very, very, very much yes. So I actually ran a panel through our science communication initiative a few years ago, and we were talking about the ethics of SciComm. And we had some of the UW legal team
Ooh.
Sit on that panel. And I know faculty members who went and changed their handles, went and changed their bio, like literally eliminated the account that they had been running as a result of that one panel conversation, because the things you're pointing to are very real and most faculty do not know about them. And certainly most graduate students do not. And definitely none of the policies are in place to protect the grad students who are the more vocal on social media these days. So are we down a little bit of a rabbit hole here? Yes. but all of this, I think, comes back to this whole thing where sometimes it's not that you are assuming the identity, it's that the entity has an identity. It has a brand. And it will hold you responsible for reflecting back on it if you are an employee.
Right. So I hear you about the rabbit hole. Just to bring it back, we're talking about work-life harmony. And right now we're talking about why it matters. It's not just a matter of productivity and how you can stay focused during work time. These things have real legal repercussions. And honestly, I don't see this talked about very often. I think that it also matters for SciComm jobs beyond just producing things. So I'm thinking about coaching and consulting. So when I do consulting for some kind of communication strategy, sometimes my job is just to come in and help the department, unit, business, whatever it is. My basic job is just, you know, help us figure out how we can make things go better. So it's a really broad description. And I find myself having to set my own boundaries for how much I care, because that's not my project. I cannot throw myself into it in the same way as if it were my project, because while I can make recommendations, I cannot take actions. I can guide them through decision-making processes. I can guide them through some of the actions we can do together. I can provide them with templates, but I cannot be held responsible then for what they do with all the information that I give to them.
It's interesting that you frame it that way, because certainly I can relate to that in my own consulting. I also see a parallel in the official work that I do at the university. I teach. I cannot make people show up to class, and I cannot make them do the things that I know if they do in practice will help them to get better at the thing that I'm sharing with them. And similarly, I'm responsible for assessment for a big research group and also for our department. And I cannot make anyone show up and do that work with me. And there's nothing to assess if there are no goals and no one doing it with me, right? So it's this, I think it's this fascinating, complicated thing about, you know, I can get myself into a tizzy about somebody not showing up and not doing their part of the work, right? And that has happened for me, especially with entities that I've already been really deeply invested in before I start working with them. And then it can almost start to feel personal if they don't use my work or they don't use it the way I envisioned. And I'm learning now that that's a flag for me. Mm-hmm. If I start taking their reaction or interaction with my work personally, I need to scrutinize my emotional investment there.
I love that you brought up assessment, because I feel like the goal ultimately would be to point to assessment as like humongous shifts in outcome. But then this whole investment of yourself and how people use your stuff, you're exactly right. I think in some cases, at least, the assessment cannot be, is it better or did I make it better? It has to be something more like, did I give them the tools to make it better or to make strides forward? It's wow. That's such a balance.
Yeah. And that is where I sit right now with my work, for sure. That is what I have to do, because I can't make them do much, honestly. I should also say that your comments about consulting feel similar to me for how I conceptualize mentoring. So for a really long time, I haven't wanted to supervise folks and see that as distinct from mentorship, which means I take a pretty hands-on approach to both. And the way I understand it, mentoring is way more than giving tasks. It's about intimately knowing a person and then working to support them feeling inspired and motivated to learn, to grow, to make, to do, whatever the circumstances are. And of course, getting to know someone that well gets us to that kind of point where we're like, okay, what are our boundaries in this relationship though? So I have to negotiate a lot these days. How do I help someone grow without being too involved in their business or their life or their schoolwork? How protective do I become of a person? How involved might I become in shaping their professional relationships with people that I already know well? And then, of course, there are all these things that they have to learn to do or navigate on their own. So then I think I also have this foundational question of like, am I holding too tightly to a relationship? Is that counterproductive, even if my motives are good?
I like that question about holding too tightly. And I think I really appreciate the mentoring and career coaching opportunities that I have as a freelancer, because honestly, that was one of the things I loved most when I was on the PI track, was the idea that you can help someone get where they want to go. It's just, I love that so much. But I think your question about holding too tightly to a relationship, I feel like freelancing now that I've left academia requires that I not hold too tightly to a relationship, because I feel like in academia, you know, I had a couple of undergrads when I was a grad student. I had some undergrads who were working on my stuff, and I got to see where they went when they graduated. You know, they told me, and we worked on applications together, and it was cool. But now I pop in for a couple career coaching sessions, and then I say goodbye, and there is no formal structure for me to have any feedback about people that I've given website remake advice to, or people whose resumes I've looked over, or even just people who I've helped like figure out their goals. Do they want to stay in academia or not? Like, I don't know if they stayed. I don't know if they're applying for stuff. I don't know if they dropped out and started a bakery. Like, I have no clue. And I think it has been an exercise almost in self-control to say, I will let myself care about this person because I have to, and that's just how I operate. But then I have to put their file goes somewhere, and then I like close out the relationship. It's like closing out a bar tab or something like that. It's like, this is done now, and I have to move on because they have, hopefully, to a good place.
Yeah, it's, of course, this is coming back around to assessment again, right? And I think part of what you're pointing to here is the conversation we started this whole podcast with at the very beginning, first episode. How do you measure outcomes, and how do you set your own expectations, and how do you do all of that around things that aren't readily quantifiable? And I mean, you could stalk these people. Most of them are probably on the internet, right? You could somehow find out. You could go look at their website again and see if they changed anything. And I think that also comes back to me to this question of harmony. And in this case, it is more of a balance thing. Like, really, is the most important thing that you need to do go check on those people and their websites every 3 months to be able to document that they changed something you told them to? No, it is not the most important thing that you can be doing, right? And so then we do have a prioritization thing here. And it's not that the assessment isn't valuable, but there are certain kinds of data that we don't need because they are not the ones that we are going to base future action or decisions on.
It's interesting that you brought up assessment and future decision-making, because we've been looking at this as a per person or per project or per like consulting interaction kind of level so far. But I actually use kind of work-life harmony as a measure of how my career is going. Am I growing? Am I moving? Am I changing and advancing? One of my long-term goals has been the past year and a half to move from doing stuff for other people to advance their ideas, to do less of that and to do more of advancing my own ideas and taking ideas that I have that are, you know, currently just ideas and then making them actual real things. And so I feel like, you know, I actually keep track of like the number of hours a week that I spend on, I think of it as other people and myself. And I have been pleased recently to, you know, be inching up the scale for the number of things I'm doing myself. I feel like for me, it's kind of a loose measure of am I leading and am I fulfilling myself?
I relate to that a lot. I'm increasingly realizing I don't want to make the things for other folks or entities. I want to do what you were talking about. I want to facilitate and help people get better. And two of the words that really sum this for me are catalyze things and build capacity. That's where I want to spend my time. And for me, as a kind of career arc and recognizing this, I first started doing SciComm in college, but I didn't know it. And then I probably was around 2011 when I officially started freelancing in SciComm. But it took until like 2018, 2019 to recognize that the stuff that really fed me was this capacity building, not just making SciComm content for entities or platforms in the world. And honestly, I think it's only been really in the last year or so that I've owned it, that I can say, this is what I want to be doing, even though most of what I was doing pre-freelancing was actually running things. It was the capacity building. It was the managing and facilitation, but I wasn't recognizing that. So basically, I think like you're saying, it's kind of a shift in how I understand myself and how I'm more consciously deciding how to spend my time.
So in terms of understanding yourself, I'm thinking again about that kind of big questions that we're starting with. And I'm thinking about, you know, all of this when we're talking now about who we are, how we're moving through life. I think, again, we're talking about the career stuff. I want to take a moment to talk about that idea I mentioned right at the beginning of the self-help articles that are about spending less on your work self so that you can get back to your not work self. And I just want to say out loud that I like working. I like working on the projects that I get to work on now. Like, I've moved to a good place where, like, all my projects I love right now. And I don't want to work less. I never wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. Like, I knew I always wanted kids, but like, I never dreamt about stopping my work or working part-time because I have too much I want to do. And so I just want to acknowledge that sometimes work-life harmony for me means working out ways that I can work more, that I can make my personal life accommodate my work life, because that's what fulfills me. And that's what I want in that moment. I feel ashamed because it feels like what you're not supposed to say, but I like working and do not try to make myself work less unless I'm feeling unhealthy about it.
Yeah, you're stomping all over a bunch of taboos there. Yeah. and I celebrate that you're doing that. And I could go down some philosophical rabbit holes about, anyway, the point is that I think that we have been trying to figure out what it takes to be a whole person and to have the people that we live with and care for and the people that we work with and care about not have to be competing. And socially, we're not set up well for that, right? So we all get to navigate this on our own, like we're going to somehow change the system as individuals. And I think that it's not going to happen that way. We all know we're not going to change the system, just one of us. But I do find that when we get to talk about these things, for me, it is helpful to think about why I might, like you're saying, why I might want to spend all of my Sunday afternoon working on something that people would categorize as work, right? Or why I need to take my Monday afternoon and go do something that people would think of as care work or homemaking. Mm-hmm.
I remember having a conversation recently with a colleague that I'm working on some SciComm stuff with, but mostly we're just kind of work together colleagues. And I remember saying that I needed more time to work on this deadline-driven thing. And she said, well, can't you just make it? You know, are you not allowed to work on it at nighttime or this weekend? And I was like, oh, I could. And she was like, okay, so why don't you? I was like, just like that? Wait, what? And it was so radical. And it felt like revolutionary to have something like that, for her just to say it, like it was normal. But then I talked to my husband and I was like, I would be able to join the family stress-free and with my whole self, if I could just have 2 hours to knock this out, I could stop thinking about it. He was like, yeah, of course, do that. Like, here's the time, I'll do this. And then I did. And it was so much, everything was so much better. Work was better, I was better. But it felt like I was bad. I don't know. I don't know how to end this. If this is you, you're not alone. I don't think we're bad, but it feels weird to talk about out loud.
Well, all of this is transgressive, right? Because we are trying not to get, as that wonderful article said, we don't want our brains pickled on a shelf in a pantry, but we also do choose to have families and relationships of various natures, right? And we do feel responsibility to those.
Yeah. Okay, so like we've said this whole episode, I'm doing the wrap-up thing. Work-life balance is better said for us as work-life harmony. We recognize that work and life are often not distinct and separate things. And instead of trying to fit those blurry things into neat boxes with boundaries that are always solid, we feel like we're just kind of constantly evaluating our relationships to the folks around us and the projects and organizations we're involved in. Work-life harmony is about active decisions, not passive participation. And I'll add that we are not always going to get it right, but we are certainly going to try.
Yep. So over to you, listeners. If you wake up in the middle of the night, what is keeping you up? What has gotten past your carefully placed gates and is just running amok in your head? What are you so invested in that it pops up without invitation?
I think if there's something that does keep you up like that at night, it may be an indication that your investment in that person or activity or relationship or whatever may not be as deliberate as it could be. So it's not necessarily that you want to get rid of the thing, but it's about defining the space it's occupying rather than just letting it define its own space. So think about that for a second and decide if you want to take action so that you feel a little bit more in control.
So, dear listeners, if you really want to hold yourself accountable, talk about what or who you're ruminating about involuntarily. Chat about it with colleagues or friends, or get in touch with us. We would love to commiserate.
You've been listening to Meteor, the honest podcast about SciComm with impact. Next week is the last episode of season one. We did it. Well, we almost did it. We're almost there. If you want to stay in touch with us before season two starts, please do that through Twitter or through our website, and make sure that you check out meteorsciComm.org/courses so that you can jump right in with us when the semester starts. We are both going to be offering things next January.
To join this conversation, leave us a review, say hello on Twitter using @MeteorSciComm, or check out everything we do in addition to the podcast on our website, meteorsciComm.org.
Talk soon.